Okay, so every week around just over 6,000 adolescent girls and young women become infected with HIV, and the majority of these infections occur in sub-Saharan Africa. So there are several reasons why women in sub-Saharan Africa are more likely to get infected with HIV, but a biological factor that has gained traction in recent years is the nature of the vaginal microbiome, where these individuals have bacteria in the vaginal tract that is associated with subclinical inflammation. So just a bit of going back to a bit of basics here. So most infections in women occur via the female reproductive tract, where HIV can establish infection by entry through the vagina, ectocervix and endocervix, and potentially other sites in the upper female reproductive tract, if you believe Tom Hope's data. But the probability of HIV, I'm keeping it cash, so the probability of HIV transmission per exposure event is usually relatively low, 1 in 1,000. And that is due to the defence mechanisms in the female reproductive tract. And that includes physical defence mechanisms such as mucus. That mucus, thick mucus plug sits on top of these columnar epithelial cells in the endocervix, acting as a barrier for the virus to traverse the single layer of columnar epithelium to infect target cells in the submucosa. And to some extent, this more substantial stratified epithelium in the ectocervix and vagina. There's also biological defence mechanisms, including immune cells, and particularly I'd like to highlight epithelial cells, because they respond to microbial and pathogen-associated molecular patterns to produce immune mediators, including antivirals and pro-inflammatory mediators that ordinarily are important for clearing infection, although paradoxically they promote HIV infection in women. And of course, the lumen of the vagina is not sterile. It is colonised with the microbiota, which are a community of commensal bacteria along with fungi and viruses, although most of the work that I'm going to talk about is really about the bacteria. And in women who have optimal vaginal microbiota, you'll see competition of these bacteria with other pathogens. And these bacteria produce some antimicrobial factors, including bacteriocins, and organic acid metabolites, such as lactic acid that's produced by a lactobacillus species, which I'm going to talk about in more detail. So studies using non-culture-dependent methods, so NGS methods by Jacques Revel several years ago, have shown that the vaginal microbiota of women who are asymptomatic and of reproductive age, that 90% of these women have microbiota that's lactobacillus dominated. And these bacterial communities can be divided into community state types, where women have microbiota dominated by L. crispatus, L. gasseri, Inners, and L. jensenii. And there are also community state types where there are modest and no lactobacillus species, but an increase in anaerobic bacteria, as shown here. So not all lactobacillus species are created equal. So L. crispatus is the most protective against STIs, including HIV, and acidifies the vagina to a lower pH compared to the other microbiota, and that's driven by lactic acid. And then there's L. inners, which is least protective because it's less stable to intrinsic and extrinsic factors such as menses and sex, and it transitions into this... I knew this was going to happen. Community state type here, where there's community state type 4, where there's no lactobacillus species and this increase in anaerobes. And this looks very much like a condition called bacterial vaginosis, and I'm going to call it BV. And BV is a type of non-optimal vaginal microbiota. So why do we care about BV? Well, it's a common yet poorly understood vaginal condition in women of reproductive age. And in terms of the prevalence in Africa, it's 55%, where there's a high prevalence of HIV. And it's characterised by an increase in the load of obligate and facultative anaerobes and a depletion of beneficial lactobacilli, as you can see here. So you've got your lactobacilli, which are the rods, and when you have BV, you have this polymicrobial condition. So BV is a concern, and that's symptomatic and asymptomatic BV, because it's associated with adverse sexual and reproductive health outcomes. And so a woman with BV, with BV, has an increased risk of acquiring HIV by twofold from the male partner, and transmitting HIV to their male partner by threefold. However, the way BV is actually diagnosed in these studies, and I've listed the studies down there, is by traditional techniques, and that includes AMCLS criteria, which is a clinical technique, and the Nugent score, which is a Gram stain. So we know that BV is clinically and microbiologically heterogeneous. That's really underscored by molecular techniques that are now being used to characterise the microbiome. However, the advent of these molecular techniques to characterise the microbiota has led to some confusion in the field as to whether BV is actually associated with increased HIV acquisition. And this came to the fore at the last HIV Research for Prevention meeting in Spain. There was a session on the HIV and the microbiome. And after one of the first speakers, there was heated discussion about whether BV was associated with increased HIV risk. And it was all about semantics. So we decided after that that, you know, we should write a perspectives article to clarify the field and the role of BV in HIV acquisition, and also propose standardised nomenclature to describe the vaginal microbiome. So the underlying premise of this nomenclature is to actually define the method used to characterise the vaginal microbiome. So here we've got the traditional methods, the clinical method, which is AMCLS criteria. So instead of saying AMCLS, we'll say AMCLS BV, so putting BV at the end. So for AMCLS BV, you need to meet three or four AMCLS criteria, so abnormal vaginal discharge, pH of greater than 4.5, clue cells, which are epithelial cells covered with bacteria, and a fishy odour. And then with Nugent, we call that Nugent BV, which is diagnosed by a Gram stain, so looking at morphotypes, with Nugent score of 7 to 10, being Nugent BV, and then we'll have Nugent score 4 to 6, which is representative of intermediate BV, and a Nugent score of 0 to 3, which is non-BV, which is lactobacillus dominated. And then we've defined molecular BV. So that's based on using molecular techniques to identify non-optimal bacterial communities depleted of lactobacilli with an abundance of anaerobes. And this can be divided into two types of BV, if you like, the sequence BV, where the methodology used is next-gen sequencing. So if you use 16S ribose RNA gene sequencing, also known as broad-range PCR, if you can define microbiota where you've got depletion of lactobacilli and increase in anaerobes, then that sequence sequi BV, provided that you can also show that those particular community of bacteria is associated with increased genital inflammation and increased HIV risk. And another way of characterising the microbiome is by quantitative PCR. And in this particular methodology, they're looking at it's a taxon-specific PCR, so you're looking at the actual concentration of a particular bacteria in the bacterial community. And if you've got an association between that a taxa and, again, increased genital inflammation, HIV risk, then that would be characterised as BV as well. So I'll show examples of that. But I just wanted to show you this iceberg, because really when we're looking at BV and we're looking at AMCLS and Nugent BV, that we're really only seeing the tip of the iceberg, and that with the molecular BV, we can actually now detect suboptimal, non-optimal microbiota, which is associated with genital inflammation and increased HIV risk. And it's not to say that the AMCLS and Nugent are not important. They've been important diagnostic methods in the clinic and in epidemiological studies, but I think that the molecular techniques are giving us a more sensitive and more granular look at what's going on with the microbiome. So in this example here, this is a study by Doug Kwan, and it's called the Fresh Cohort Study, which is a prospective observational study in young women in sub-Saharan Africa, looking at the vaginal microbiome and increased risk of HIV. So in contrast to the study by Jacques Revelle that was done in the United States, These women have microbiota that is, well, the majority of these women have microbiota which is depleted of lactobacillus species. And they can be divided into this cervicotype 4, where each line represents a woman and the colours represent different taxa of the bacteria. And you can see here the relative abundance of the different taxa. And that is really diverse. So they call this really a diverse vaginal microbiome. And then there's cervicotype 3, where it's dominated by Gardnerella vaginalis. And then in contrast to the women in the US, only a small percentage of women have the protective lactobacillus crispatus. And we've got 32% of women here with lactobacillus innes, which is the less protective lactobacillus species. So what Doug Kwan did was look at these microbiota and then look at the risk for HIV acquisition as well as other factors. But before I go and say and to that data, I just wanted to say that the majority of women who acquired HIV in this study were asymptomatic and negative for Nugent BV, as characterised by a Nugent score from 7 to 10. So that's just telling you that this molecular analysis is just giving us a more granular picture of microbiota that's associated with increased HIV risk. So in this study, Doug Kwan also looked at the chemokines and cytokines in the vaginal tract and found that women who had lactobacillus depleted microbiota, so CT3 and 4, had increased levels of chemokines and cytokines, as shown here. And that was associated with an increase in CD4 and CCR5 positive T cells in the cervix, particularly with CT4, where there was a 17-fold increase in these cells, which is the fuel for HIV replication. And then in this lovely study here, they showed that women who had CT4 had over a 4-fold increase in HIV acquisition. Women with CT3 and the L. innes-dominated microbiota, there was an increased risk but didn't reach statistical significance. And women with L. crispatus-dominated microbiota seemed to be protected against HIV. So follow-up studies by Scott McClellan and from Jeannie Marazzo actually now looked at not the community but looked at specific taxa with quantitative PCR. And so on the left, this is a study that was performed in Africa from 5 cohorts. And they show here that the actual concentration of these particular microbiota or taxa was associated with increased risk of HIV, such as Jamella. And if you now look on the right-hand side here, which is a study by Jeannie Marazzo, I can barely see it, but here, for example, you can see with mycoplasma that as you increase the concentration of the particular taxa, that there's an increased risk of HIV. And if you don't have that particular taxa, then there's no increased risk. And I also wanted to point to L. crispatus here because this is really intriguing where as you increase, these are tertiles, so increasing concentrations as you go forward. But if you have high concentrations of lactobacillus crispatus, the woman is actually protected against HIV acquisition, suggesting that lactobacilli crispatus are producing something that is doing something proactive in preventing HIV acquisition. So this is a slide I pinched from Adam Bergener, but just to summarise what's going on here. So on the left-hand side, you have particular taxa that's been shown in these studies that are associated with cervicovaginal inflammation and increased HIV risk. And on the other side of the slide here, you see taxa that is associated with a non-inflammatory general environment and protection against HIV acquisition. So just to summarise what's going on here in the vaginal tract, in terms of non-optimal vaginal microbiota, you have this pro-inflammatory environment, so an increase in cytokines and chemokines. What I stress, this is subclinical inflammation. But what that does is it recruits and activates HIV target cells. So these are the target cells here that are being recruited and they're activated. You also see disruption of the epithelial barrier, and that's due to the recruitment of neutrophils that have proteases that will break down the epithelial barrier, as well as the cytokines having an impact on that barrier as well. And then there's a disruption of the protective cervicovaginal mucus because these BV-associated bacteria produce sialidases and mucinases that break down the mucus. So that all promotes increased HIV risk. And on the other side of the coin, we have the optimal vaginal microbiota tending to be lactobacillus crispatus dominated. And here you see that we have homeostasis, we don't have inflammation, and we've got intact epithelial barrier integrity and decreased risk of HIV. So that's sort of a great segue to some of the work that we've been doing in my laboratory to understand, well, how do lactobacilli protect against HIV acquisition? And so two of the distinguishing features of women with lactobacillus-dominated microbiota versus those with BV is the pH. So the pH is low, less than 4.5 compared to women with BV. And the other distinguishing feature is the concentration of organic acid metabolites that are predominantly produced by the microbiota, where there's a dramatic depletion of lactic acid, as you can see here, in women with BV. So we hypothesised at the time that perhaps lactic acid might have a protective role in the female reproductive tract. So lactic acid produced by lactobacilli has an effective function in the reproductive tract. So with women who have lactobacillus-dominated microbiota, the average concentration of lactic acid is about 1%, and that is responsible for driving the pH of the vagina down to as low as pH 3.5. And that's obviously got antimicrobial activities. But that low pH is really important because what it does, it dictates the form of lactic acid that's present. So if you've got a pH below the acid dissociation constant of lactic acid, so that's what you would have in women that have lactobacillus-dominated microbiota, you have what's called the uncharged form of lactic acid. But as you increase the pH, as you would see in women with BV, what happens with this molecule is that the hydrogen is lost from the hydroxyl and you're left with the lactate anion. So that's at around neutral pH or towards neutral pH. Obviously, this is an equilibrium. So this is important because really work by my lab and others have shown it is that it's this uncharged form of lactic acid that has the activity. So uncharged lactic acid has bactericidal activity against BV-associated bacteria. It's got anti-HIV activity. Activity against gonorrhea, chlamydia and herpes simplex. We've shown that the uncharged form has anti-inflammatory effects on cervicovaginal epithelial cells that could potentially protect against HIV. And then we've got some new data looking at epithelial barrier function. So just to quickly go through these data, this is our work done by Richard Cohn and Tom Munch. It's an in vitro study showing that physiologic concentrations of lactic acids of 1% at pH 4.5 in this instance has a dramatic effect on the viability of 17 different BV-associated bacteria, but has very little effect on four lactobacillus species that are found in the vaginal tract. And if you compare the data with media acidified to the same pH with HCl, the killing activity is not as dramatic as compared to lactic acid. And several years ago, we showed that lactic acid has potent HIV virucidal activity. Again, 1% lactic acid, so physiological levels, can dramatically decrease the viability of HIV, as shown in red, compared to media acidified with other acids. And then more recently, we showed that the anti-HIV activity of lactic acid can be demonstrated in human cervicovaginal fluid. So we can get CVF, which is neat, we can throw a high titer virus in there, and then we can ask the question, is there a relationship between the lactic acid concentration and the reduction of HIV infectivity? And interestingly, we found that there was no association with the lactate anion and concentration and infectivity. And this is using a generalised linear mixed modelling. But if we then plotted the concentration of the protonated form of lactic acid against infectivity, we see a significant correlation between inactivation of HIV, again supporting the data that we showed in vitro, that it's really the protonated form of lactic acid that's doing the killing. And then more recently, we've shown that lactic acid elicits an anti-inflammatory response from human cervicovaginal epithelial cells and inhibits production of pro-inflammatory mediators associated with HIV acquisition. So this study was really prompted by not only the observation that women with lactobacillus-dominated vaginal microbiota have a non-inflammatory environment, but also this experiment shown here in a transwell model where you can co-culture lactobacillus species with vaginal or cervical vaginal epithelial cells in this transwell model, and what you'll see is that you don't elicit a pro-inflammatory response from those epithelial cells. But in contrast, if you do the same experiment with BV-associated bacteria such as azetobium, you get release of pro-inflammatory cytokines and chemokines. But what was really also intriguing is that if you do the experiment and you throw a TLR agonist on those cells, which are co-cultured with lactobacilli, there's a dampening of the pro-inflammatory cytokine and chemokines. So that suggests there's a soluble factor potentially that's having an effect, and we hypothesise that potentially lactic acid is mediating that effect, anti-inflammatory effect. So this is just to show you that, and I should say that we basically did experiments recapitulating this, but adding lactic acid instead of the bacteria, so adding lactic acid apically and then looking at cytokines and chemokines in the media. So here we show that lactic acid can elicit the production of an anti-inflammatory cytokine, IL-1RA, from a variety of cells from the female reproductive tract, including the vagina, intercervix and ectocervix, these epithelial cells, as well as primary cervico-vaginal epithelial cells. And we also were able to see this increase in IL-1RA when we did the experiment in the presence of TLR agonists, as shown here, which represent, some of which represent BV-associated bacteria and also HIV GP120, so mimicking PAMPs, if you like. And we saw that similar increase. Now, why are we interested in IL-1RA? Well, it's an antagonist of IL-1 beta, which is elevated in women that are at increased risk of HIV acquisition, I should say elevated in the vaginal tract. And on the other side of the coin, we've shown that lactic acid can dampen pro-inflammatory cytokine production. So this is an experiment where you add TLR agonist apically to the epithelial cells and you can see the increase in IL-6. And if lactic acid is present, it dampens the production of IL-6. And we saw a similar effect on pro-inflammatory chemokine, MIP-3-alpha. Again, the TLR agonists are increasing the production of MIP-3-alpha and lactic acid is inhibiting that response. And we saw similar effects with IL-8, TNF and RANTI. So these are all cytokines and chemokines that have been associated with increased HIV risk. So I'm not going to go through all the data and it's published, but just to say that we also saw that the lactic acid's immune modulatory effect is mediated by the protonated form of lactic acid, that it's not simply a low pH effect on cells. We could pre-treat and post-treat the epithelial cells with lactic acid and still see that it was able to inhibit the pro-inflammatory mediators elicited by TLR agonists, and also show that lactic acid can inhibit pro-inflammatory mediators elicited by general secretions as well. So if I've got time, just racing through this. Should have slowed down a bit. So now I'm going to shift gears.
7 seconds.
Seconds. Well, yep. I can stop here then, maybe.
Yeah.
So I'll just unfortunately I can't show you all this, but trust me. No. So I'll just go to the end. But just a summary here, because we're looking at epithelial barriers. So we've shown we've got data that suggests that lactic acid upregulates junctional molecules, tight junctions that could increase barrier function of epithelial cells of the female reproductive tract, and might retard HIV trans-epithelial migration. And these are studies that we're looking at present. But just to put everything together. Here we've got vaginal lactobacilli that have a lot of great properties to prevent HIV acquisition. And what we've shown is that lactic acid, which is the postbiotic or the metabolite, can recapitulate some of these properties. So lactic acid has anti-BV bacterial activity, anti-HIV activity and anti-inflammatory activity. And I didn't have time to show that it could potentially impact on the epithelial barrier function. And for those that are interested in the vaginal tract, estrogen increases glycogen, which is the food for lactobacilli. Okay. All right. So everything I've shown you, or most of what I've shown you, are in vitro studies. So we are really keen to show that lactic acid can actually have an effect in vivo in women with bacterial vaginosis. So at the moment, we're almost finishing formulating bespoke lactic acid-containing gels. To be delivered into the vagina so that we can do a clinical study to show that lactic acid can dampen general inflammation, shift the microbiota from polymicrobial to lactobacillus dominance, and also have an impact on epithelial barrier function using proteomics. And I'm pleased to say that we've been successful in winning a MRFF. This is a Frontiers in Health and Medical Research Stage 1 grant. So this is 1 year of funding to plan for Stage 2. And it's about bringing multidisciplinary teams to take basic research and to translate that into interventions that are going to improve human health. And so our initiative is called EVEM. So we've already got a nice little logo here. We're going to transform women's health. And EVEM stands for Enhancing the Vaginal Environment and Microbiome. And so the lactic acid study that I just talked about in the previous slide, we're hopefully when we get to stage 2, that we'll be able to do those studies in stage 2. And so with that, I'd just like to acknowledge everyone on this slide, people in my lab, my collaborators. I'm not going to go through everyone here, and also our funders down the bottom, ACHT and HMRC, MRFF and Victorian Government. And with that, thank you for your attention. I'm sorry I went over time.